Welcome to the Fayetteville Fire Podcast, your source for all the fire, safety, and sometimes random info you never knew you wanted. I'm Captain Steve Shakeshaft, your host for the podcast, and I got the best job ever. Let's talk about it. Typically, we release our podcast on the first of the month, but this month I figured let's mix it up a little bit. The 15th of September, applications are open, so you have 2 weeks to apply to come be part of the best fire department in the state and one of the best around the country. We would love to have you. And what I wanted to do is bring on some folks to kind of cover all aspects of the Fayetteville Fire Department hiring process and life as a firefighter. So today I have joining me is Hudson Zeisman. Am I saying that right?
Zeisman. Close enough.
Yes, Hudson Zeisman, who is a, what do we got, 4 months in?
Yes,
just
sir.
Finished fire training in the fire academy. Just went through the hiring process. And then also with us is master firefighter Ty Quinn. How's it going, man?
Going well. I think he just got his driver's license too. He's young.
Well, hopefully, I mean, how old are you?
25.
All right. Yes. So, I mean, like, I'll be retired by the time I'm 49. That means you'll be out by the time you're 55. So get started young, train them young. Always a good thing. Younger they are, the more trainable they are. Unlike some who came in a little bit later in life,
yeah,
over there.
Well,
yeah. Speaking of, tell us about yourself, Ty.
Oh, well, my name's Ty Quinn. I've been here for almost going on 20 years. I've worn many hats with the City of Fayetteville Fire Department. I started out at Station 14 on the SRs back in the day.
Back in the day.
So I've had my toes dipped in the rescue and the hazmat side of the department. You know, I spent a lot of time out in the hazmat field. That's where I'm at right now, Station 17. I was at one time the assistant training officer back in 16, maybe.
Yeah, it's
15,
been a while.
16, yeah. And before I took a little hiatus, I was at Station 9 at one of the busier fun houses. So
I loved my time there.
Oh, yeah. Spent a lot of good sleepless nights there. So
yeah,
had a fun time there.
You're one of those unique circumstances, went and tried something new, tried something better, your family decided to come back. So we're glad to have you back, number one. And you had promoted before you left. And one thing we talk about a lot is that it's hard to keep those 20-year firefighters that you need on the back of the truck. It is very, as much as I want everybody to promote and I want everybody to move up, there is huge value in someone riding backwards that has been doing this for 20 years, especially training the new Hudsons of the world.
That's right.
Getting them brought up. So you enjoying that opportunity since you've come back to?
Yeah, it's more than a paycheck. You know, what I like to think is what keeps me here isn't just the work, it's the people.
Yeah, for
really.
Sure.
It's knowing that what we do really makes a difference.
You know,
we can tell stories all day long on the calls we go to, but the biggest thing for me is knowing that I matter and the things that I do, you know, that there's purpose here.
Yeah.
You know, I believe to simplify this job, our job is just to show up on somebody's darkest day and be that little flicker of light, little bit of hope. And that's what keeps me coming back. That's what made me come back. You know, it's not the thrills and excitement, because we all know as firefighters, there's 5 minutes of action and, you know, 23 hours and 55 minutes of preparing for it.
So. Cleaning up after it.
Exactly.
Yep. So. All right. Well, Hudson, tell us a little bit about you, man. Like I said, what, 4 months on the job now?
4 months, brand new. So my name's Hudson Zeisman. I sat down and had a chat with Captain Cheetah January 4th, and I put in my interest card application that night. And then, because I knew with his conversation, we talked for about 2 hours and at Station 2, and I was like, I want to do this. I want to help people and be in the great city of Fayetteville and do something better, not just have a job, but make it a career and help people.
And you were at Methodist? Is that where you went to school?
Yes, sir. I played soccer there for 5 years, went back and was the strength and conditioning coach there. And then I was there for about a semester coaching, and then wanted a little bit more.
Born and raised in Fayetteville?
So I was born in Georgia, but my dad was in the Army. So yep. I'm an Army brat.
Everybody's story. Yeah.
And he retired out of Fayetteville. And then that's what I wanted to do, help people, because I saw him his whole life, you know, in the Army, helping the nation. And I was like, nothing better.
Cool. So tell me about your experience in the hiring process. You said you dropped your application. You had talked to some folks at Six before that.
Yes,
they even called me about you. I don't know if you know that or not, but they called me about you. The application process, how did that go for you? Smooth, easy to follow, difficult, challenging? What do you think?
So I never been through a hiring process like that. It was my last job. It was like the coach called me and he was like, hey, you want to come on the coaching staff? And I was like, yeah. So I put in my application, got an email a couple weeks later. Everything went really smooth. And Captain Shake Shaft caught up with everything. It was like, show up at this time, this date. We need this information from you. And it was real easy to follow. It was this week you're doing this, the written test. Another week you're doing the physical ability test. You have this interview,
yeah,
and all the information to go along with it. It was very smooth. Everything was timed out perfect. Wasn't too long. Wasn't rushed. So yeah, everything was great.
A little bit different from when we went through it.
A lot different, I believe, from when we went through it.
What year did you come on again?
07, 08.
So I was just a couple of years before you.
Yeah. Pick the hose up. You know,
yep,
put it back down.
If you got to run a half mile in 6 minutes, yeah, if you can't walk a half mile fast in 6 minutes, I think something.
Yeah. Well, the worst part about that is when I got hired, there was a little bit of miscommunication. So I came dressed. You know, I had wing tips on, I had khaki pants on, button up shirt, and they're like, "You are going to run in that."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Excuse me, I thought we were taking a test." "You are. This is a physical test." I was like, "Oh."
So our old test, I try to explain it to people. It was not a hard test.
No.
But it was the easiest test in the region to fail.
Follow directions.
Because if you made one mistake, you were out. One mistake and you were done. Versus now, with the test we have now, you've got 10 minutes and 20 seconds where if you're super fast on the stairs and you can maintain that cardio, you can make up time for upper body strength areas that you may be a little weaker later, or vice versa, because we're looking for that well-rounded employee. It's not the strongest person. Not the fastest person. So if you're really fast and a little less strong, you can still do it.
Yes,
if you're a little slower but super strong, you could do it too. So it's still a challenge. It is a harder test, but it's much more balanced, I guess, is the word you could look for.
And, you know, something about that test in general is the data that we collected. You know, Jason Bass and I were in the training facility at the time, and we had to collect the data from every firefighter that was already on the job there. You might remember the Summer of Love back in July having to run all that. So it was a lot of data to collect, but we made sure that everyone on the department had the ability. We weren't asking the other people to do the job that we weren't expected to do. So we got an earful of people complaining that we were doing it in July. We didn't choose the date, but
that's right.
I think in the long run, I think it panned out better.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've actually, you know, this year for the first time we've changed. We were accepting applications every January for like the last 6 or 7 years. It's been January steady all the time. This year, we're actually making a change running the process now in the fall rather than January. And it's not so much the testing time, but when they are finishing the Fire Academy time. So what this is going to do now is we're not doing fire control, rapid intervention, all these insanely labor-intensive classes where on a house fire, we fight fire, we're working really hard for, 2 hours, right?
Give or take,
on the job,
yeah.
2 hours. Mm-hmm. In fire control class, you're pretending to fight a fire 13 times a day, all day, and you're miserable. And under our old status, under our old rather schedule, that was happening in June and July. So what we wanted to do was shift our hiring process to make sure that we're taking care of our people and we're not putting them in this strenuous training that is, it's already hard enough. But if we don't do it at a different time of year, it could be dangerous. So we're moving the hiring process to get it to more of a cooler time of year when we're running that week long of beat you down.
That's what it is.
So tell me about it. You just went through fire control, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago?
Yes, sir. And then finished up with hazmat and then RIT and all that was at the end of it.
So how was fire control in August or July, whenever it was you went through it?
It was hot. It was hot for sure, but everyone enjoyed it. The instructors are awesome, from Fayetteville to FTCC. Everyone is great, but it was definitely hot. But one of the instructors was like, you can't pick when a fire happens. And that really stuck with me. I'm like, You're exactly right. I mean, people might be complaining, why are we doing this in the summer? You never know. It could be 100 degrees outside and you walk up to a fire. You can't choose. Yeah. It's going to be hot.
And
so
I'm a firm believer in that too. But again, it's a little bit different when we're putting you in that situation for 8 hours of misery.
That's right.
And you're just getting started. You're just walking in the door. Ty and I, we've done this for 20 years. We've kind of grown accustomed to it. Our bodies have become more used to it. If I had a call where this call is going to last 8 hours a day, I'm not going to make the same people do the work for 8 hours straight. We're going to rotate out, right? So we want to make sure we're taking care of our people. So
yes,
making that, you know, making that change so it's there. But one of the things that kind of hits me about fire control and RIT specifically is you've built, by the time in the academy, by the time you get there, you have, I don't want to say cliques, but you have friend groups,
right?
You have little circles that busts it all up because everybody is working hard with everybody.
Yes,
and I think it helps build that camaraderie of the class.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys see that?
Absolutely. I mean, because we were split off into six squads, and then during RIT week, Captain McBee was like, hey, split them off into different groups, three people each group.
Yep.
And I was like, all right, before I name the groups, don't be mad at me. These are your groups. You can't pick who's at your station. So work together as a team. But after that, it definitely brought the whole class together and got the attitude of, hey, we can actually do this job.
Yeah.
So.
Well, also, you got to look at it too, is at any time of the night, you could be assigned to a different unit. You know, in the middle of the night, somebody goes home sick, you could get picked up to go to that shift, and
that's
you might
right.
not know them. You, especially you being a new guy, you'll end up going over there, and you might not even meet them. But they might already be in the bunk for the night. You get toned out to a call. Now you have to adapt and work with this group.
Exactly.
And you haven't had it. And what's pretty great with our training division is that we're all certified to the level North Carolina requires of us. But I think we go above and beyond when it comes to the certification. It's one thing to be trained to the lowest standard. We put that little bit of a spin on it. We want to be the best that we possibly can be. And I think we do our best to look at and look out for everyone on the department to make sure that we're getting the training we need. So,
yes, sir.
So it's pretty.
That's exactly right, too, because we would sometimes finish, you know, our station that we were assigned. And we're like, hey, we got, you know, a couple hours. You guys did great, finished all the stations. Do you guys want to do something else training-wise? And they'd be like, yeah, this isn't a required practical for the state, but this is going to get you some more hands-on training that definitely helped me, but I'm sure it helped the class as well.
When you were, Ty, when you were assigned as a training officer, we were doing the multi-companies. We dropped down a little bit during COVID, but when you were there, we were doing four times a year, right?
Yeah.
So how was that being able to watch crews that didn't always work together? How was that to be able to see that interaction from a training perspective where it is a controlled environment? How did that look on from a stand back and watch level when you got to see crews that didn't work together every day come together?
That's a good question. You know, what it actually opened up my training and leadership philosophy more, because what you just said there, you got crews that run in and you've got, everybody knows on the shift, the strong powerhouse, you know, station is, or firefighter is, or captain. We know that, say Hudson, for example, he's our water guy. If something happens near the water, we want Hudson to be there for us. Especially when I was over at the training center, we tried to shake it up a lot. You know,
yeah.
We wanted to put people that we knew could do the job. Everybody, like I said, we're all certified to do the job, but we wanted them to be outside of their comfort zone to see that. And to build that, not only a camaraderie to say that, hey, we're only as strong as our weakest link, but to say that even if we have a weak link there, we can still do the job and get it done.
Yeah.
And that opened my eyes a lot, to be honest with you. I think it opened a lot of people's eyes out there. And I think just how the training has evolved, even since before I was in the training center or even after that, I think our training has become more structured, and the development and the exemplification of how we do our job is exciting to see where we've come and where we're at right now.
How many times, and don't lie, Hudson, have you heard in the fire academy somebody make the comment, we know this isn't how we do it, but it's how the book says.
Absolutely.
Right.
All the time.
It's
all the time.
Right. Yes, so sir. What we've tried to do, to your point, is we had a fire chief, our previous fire chief, that he used to say, and I would hear it all the time, we're either going to change the policy or we're going to change how we do things. If we're not doing things the way it says we're supposed to be doing them, then one of those things needs to change. The policy might be wrong. And I think we've come a long way in the last 10 years in training to the way we do things and the way we operate. We're not sending four-person engine companies to training because we want good times. No, if that house is a three-person engine, then that's who's going to go. So we get a true reflection of what our skills are and what our times are and how we do stuff. I mean, is that accurate? I feel like I've seen that from the outside looking in since I've been off the trucks for 6 years.
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty accurate. I mean, and like everything else, when you go into the training area, you want to train like you play, play like you train, you know.
Yep.
The quote is, let no man's ghost say my training has failed me.
Yeah.
So if you look at it in those eyes and that perspective, you're going to get what you put into it.
Yeah.
And I hope that we take it seriously enough that we understand that we're training to save a life, not only the people we've sworn to protect, but maybe our brother or sister we're standing next to. So.
Yeah. I think it might be Shrek's coffee cup. It's either Shrek's coffee cup or Chief Mafia's down at the training center. It says, you can never train too hard for a job that'll kill you. And I've all that seeing that just stuck in my brain, like you've got to. And the cool part, one thing I don't want folks listening to this to kind of freak out when we talk about that stuff, because like you said, we provide that training. We provide everything you need under the optimal of circumstances to not die. And I mean, in my 20 years, I really can only think of three or four situations that I found myself in that I wasn't confident my training could get me out of. There were a couple hairy moments. And I think my muscle memory kicked in, my training kicked in, my supervisors grabbed me by the shoulder and kicked in. Yeah. But it's rare that I have a moment where I'm like, I am not ready for this moment in my life right now. I don't know about you, but I've only had a few.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say everything I've walked into, I've had an exit strategy.
Yeah.
So it's always, that's one of the first things you should learn is know where your exits are. If I can give you anything, Hudson,
thank you, sir.
That's one you need to know.
Awesome.
So when you were coming into this, Hudson, what did you think about that stuff when you were deciding this is what I want to do? Was mortality something that you thought about coming into it?
Oh yeah, for sure. It definitely was something that, you know, I had to talk to my parents, my loved ones, and be like, hey, I'm doing this, you know, knowing the sacrifices that we all go through. And I think wanting to help other people kind of outweighed that, me thinking about that all the time.
Yeah.
But just like what you were saying, the training makes you feel more comfortable in those situations.
Yeah.
Because we train exactly like what you said. We train like it's real life. You know, if you train like it's not, you know, when you get out on the streets and you know what you're doing, it's just second nature. You know, what you train is what you're going to do on the street. And I think that's something that I'm definitely going to carry with me as I'm starting this journey out, going into my probationary year. So yes, sir.
Yeah, it was kind of, for me, it was weird because I was 18, 19 years old and it was just the adrenaline. I wasn't thinking about that stuff until I got into the job. Yeah. So I want to make sure we're letting people know, you know, this is something to think about. But here's all the things we're doing to make sure you go home safe. So
it's got to be a respect. You know, you have to respect the job. Don't fear the job. I think that's another good part about awareness and training in general. If we're training in fear, then we're going to make wrong decisions. And any decision made in fear is going to get you hurt, or you're making an indecision. And I believe personally, there's three decisions you can make on the fire ground: the right one, the wrong one, and no decision at all. And I think the one that's going to get you hurt is the one where you make no decision at all, because you have no control over the situation itself. You're going to let the situation dictate what it wants to do, not what you want it to do.
Yep.
So at least if you make the wrong decision, you go, well, this ain't working. Let's back up for a second, you know?
And I've never had a supervisor that when I made a decision, and it was the wrong decision, but I had a reason behind it. I had a thought process behind it. I could have been completely wrong. I have never had a supervisor tear into me.
Yeah.
It's always been a learning opportunity. It's always been understanding. It's when you stand there and go,
One of my favorite stories going on that is the old V point that caught on fire.
Oh yeah.
When I was at 14, Bradshaw was our commander at the time, and it was just whooping us. Everything we threw at it, it wasn't working. And I was beat up. You know, we've been out there 2.5 hours. It's still actively burning. And Bradshaw pulls everybody aside and he's like, "Boys, listen here. It ain't working. All right, we're gonna pull back and punt." And I looked at him, I'm like, "Are we allowed to pull back and punt? I thought once we're attacking, we don't stop." And he's like, "Nah. I could keep throwing you guys at this thing and it's just going to break you.
Yep.
Let's sit back for a second. It's doing what it's going to do. I know where it's going to go.
Yep.
Let's just sit back and figure this out."
Yeah.
That right there opened my eyes. I was about 6 months on the job, and he's a good guy to work with because he would sit there and tell you what was going on.
You know,
he wasn't afraid to, if you had a question, obviously you wouldn't question his authority or anything like that, but he would teach while he was doing the job. And that really opened my eyes on what this job actually was and what commitment you had to have to be there. What's great about when you get on is you're going to have all these guys that have been around for a long time. You're going to have a whole hodgepodge, a hullabaloo, if you will, of people and commotion going on. And you're going to gain all this experience from them. And what you take from that, I hope you learn. You know, you don't have to learn the hard way.
Yes, sir.
You know, you don't have to touch the hot stove yourself to see that it burns you. You're going to have guys like me going, "Hey, man, I promise you, if you do that, it's gonna burn you."
Yes, sir.
And whether you take it or not is what we're going to see. Like, if you touch it, we're going to laugh at you because, "Hey, man, I told that guy it was hot, but look, he did it anyways."
Yes, sir.
You know,
yeah. That's right.
But it's an exciting time. I think the first 3 years of your career, you're gonna have a good time. It's gonna be eye opening for you. So
yes, sir. I cannot wait.
And my very first shift as a lieutenant, I was at Station 9.
I was very your very first shift. You caught a fire. I was there.
It was a gas leak.
Yeah,
it was a gas leak. So I'm standing out front, and I'm doing my thing. My captain's out for my very first shift. My captain ain't there, so I'm out running my thing. And Chief Whiteside shows up. And if you've ever met Chief Whiteside, I didn't expect him to do what he did. I love you to death, Chief, if you're listening, but I didn't see it coming. He walked up to me. He said, "Shake Shaft, what do you got?" And I gave him a rundown of everything I had. And he said, "All right, I'm in your back pocket. Keep doing what you're doing." And he stood there. And even when I was making the right decisions, he would ask me questions. "Why are you doing that? Why are you doing this?" Not in a bad way. It was a mentoring moment. And I think we as an organization, as often as we can, we're having those. Sometimes there's a time to learn and there's a time not to learn. Like, there's times where chiefs are going to have to show up and say, hey, Jack, you go do this. I got this."
Yeah,
right.
The difference between transformational and transactional.
Yeah.
On the job, it's transaction. I tell you to do something, you do it. Give and pay.
Yeah.
Transformational, we go back to the station, we talk it out. "Hey, man, I did this because of this."
Yep.
You know.
But even on the fire scene, sometimes we have opportunities to do both, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to see when you get out there as a new firefighter, you might have a master firefighter who... I don't know about you, Ty, but I had a hard time giving up my nozzle. I had a hard time saying, "Wait a minute, this rookie needs some nozzle time." But I did.
I'm a 43-year-old master firefighter. I don't mind giving it up a little
bit
and taking a break.
I'm saying back in the day, man. So you might have a master firefighter who says, "Hey, this is you, Bubba. Grab that nozzle. I'll be right behind you.
Yes, sir.
Let's roll with it." Or a situation even on EMS calls. We had a shooting situation that I was in. Brand new captain. I've been a captain for like 3 weeks at another agency. And all of a sudden I'm in this situation where I have no muscle memory of how to handle this. Right. But somebody on your crew does.
Exactly.
And they're giving you that kind of guidance. Have you seen that? You had a few people in your academy that had a little bit of experience. Were they able to kind of help with that stuff too? And in a humble way, at least?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. For sure. And they're always like, the instructors are always like, "Ask questions, ask as many as you want right now," like the first 2 days of a module or ops. And then that last day, they're like, "Hey, show us what you got."
Yeah.
And then we knew the guys that had some experience. We were like, "Hey, am I doing this right? Or do I need to do this?" And they always had the best advice. They were like, "What have you learned?" You know, and just like, and you do it, and you either do it right or you do it wrong. But they'll tell you after, "Hey, that's not what you did right, or that's what you did wrong."
So yeah.
It was nice having those people there for sure. Cause me going into the academy, I had zero experience.
Yeah.
Well, that's another tip I'll give you too for learning this job is it doesn't matter how old you are in this, always ask questions. I mean, there's still things that I might not know, or I definitely don't know, believe me. And the biggest thing I learned is that if you go in there with a student's heart willing to gain and learn from it, you're going to go far in this job. The day that you forget that, the day that you quit learning, you're a danger to this job.
Yes, sir.
And you don't need to be doing it anymore, because it's going to teach you one way or the other, you know? We've got examples of that throughout the years. You know, we're not going to talk about it, but it will show you. And we work hand in hand with Murphy, and whenever you don't realize that, Murphy's going to smack you in the head.
Yes, sir. Hey,
this is what you're going to learn. So yes, that's tip number two for you.
I got probably
three more for you.
Oh, I'm soaking it all in. It's awesome.
So real quick, before we wrap up, I definitely wanted to cover just a little bit of the hiring process itself for the listeners. So applications are open up now. They open up Monday morning. You have the opportunity for 2 weeks to apply. After that 2 weeks, guess when the next opportunity is? September of next year. Wow. So you got 2 weeks to get those applications in. After you do that, you'll receive some email communication after the window closes for your written exam. That written exam requires no fire knowledge whatsoever. Reading comprehension, math, problem solving, memory at about a 10th grade level. Hudson, hardest part of the written test.
The memorization.
Memory. Yep. Memory, exactly. 110% yes, is the yes, hardest sir. Part. The rest of it, if you have, you know, been through 10th grade classes, you're pretty much, you should be okay.
Oh, yes.
Get through that physical ability test, 10 minutes and 20 seconds. Check out the website. You can see everything that's expected of you. But the biggest thing I can tell you is cardio. The very first thing you're going to do is climb 4 flights of stairs 3 times with a 50-pound weight vest on. We're going to smoke you before you do anything else. So cardio.
Lower body and cardio.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yep.
Upper body, I mean, it's important, but I promise you, if you got a good base,
yep,
it's gonna carry you through this.
Body
job.
Mechanics will get you through the rest of it if you've got that good base,
yep,
right?
Definitely.
And we will have some opportunities during this hiring process for you to come out and practice. Usually, we do them in advance, and historically, I've always done candidate orientations before applications open. But this year, we'll have candidate orientations during open recruitment, so the 25th and the 28th. All of that info is in the email you should have received. So if you apply, you're going to be invited to that candidate orientation. Once you get past that physical ability test, then we have the interviews. And what I tell people is the interview is where you show me who you are. We do not want the fastest, strongest person if they're not the right person. So the written test matters. The physical ability test matters. But the interview is what matters.
And I think just to add on to that is this is where your beliefs and values play a key here. The department has its own beliefs and values, and you can get those. I mean, you can look on the website and find them out, but really look at that and see and if that's what your heart says. Again, this is a servant service job. You know, we are going out of our way to help people.
Exactly.
And if you can't do that, then this probably isn't for you. But
yeah.
I honestly believe that the people that apply for this job have a servant heart in them, and they want to do good. And you have an opportunity to do that. It's one of the most amazing things in the world. So
another Chief Hill quote: at every graduation, he would look at the recruits, because, you know, graduation's a big party for you. It's a big party to recognize your accomplishments. And he would say, enjoy today, because it is the last day that it is about you. From here on out, it is about everybody but you.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the kind of people we're looking for that have that mindset.
And it's a culture too.
Yeah.
You know? And going back on the beliefs and the values, the culture that the department has is, again, you don't have to be, like he said, the fastest or the strongest. But I promise you this, if you were the person that puts someone else above you, you're going to make it here. Because that's what this is all about.
Amen.
If you can put your ego aside and say, hey, I don't know how to do this, that right there is going to exemplify you among everybody else. Hey, this guy, because we're all, you know, it's the whole alpha male or the alpha community or whatever. We don't like to show our weaknesses. But if you do that to your crew, they're going to see how genuine you are. And they're going to go, okay, well, this is something that he knows that we need to work on. They're all going to come together, rally behind you, and work on it too. And
exactly.
If they don't, come to me. And I'll talk to him. I promise. That's your third tip there.
I appreciate it.
Well,
thank you.
I can't think of any better way to wrap up our conversation. So, guys, thank you so much for coming down, spending the afternoon with me. And thank you for joining us on the Fayetteville Fire Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to Radio Fayetteville on all your favorite streaming platforms to listen to all of our podcasts. Join us again next month. But until then, stay safe, Fayetteville.